Welcome back to the Crypto Trends Podcast, where we cover all things cryptocurrency, blockchain, Web 3.0, and AI. I'm Robert Croak, and I'm joined by my co-host, Armando Pantoja. Both of us and our amazing team are excited to bring you the best information, guidance, and strategies each and every Wednesday. So follow along and always remember to take notes and take action. Okay, let's get into talking point number one. The Bitcoin halving has completed. So guys, we made it. Since the very first episode, we've been talking about this date, and we're glad to say that we've finally reached it. So Armando, what are your expectations for Bitcoin following this halving?
Now, I'm a person that likes to look at historical analysis on things that happened in the past. If you know what happens in the past, a lot of times you can predict the future. So I look at the previous two halvings, the first one in 2016, and the last one was in 2020. Right. So it's very interesting to me that every single time we've seen Bitcoin rallied into that halving, had a sizable correction afterwards, and then settled down and was a 4 to 7 month wait until that we saw that exponential growth. In 2016, we saw that same thing happen. In 2020, we saw COVID. Came right before the halving. I think it was a couple of months or right around it. Caused Bitcoin to crash. Bitcoin came out of the crash. The halving happened. There was a lull period, a little bit of growth after that. And then there was the exponential growth 4 to 7 months later. So if you look at historical history, the same thing is going to happen again, more than likely. And I like to look at history to try to predict what's coming next.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, Armando, and thanks for the breakdown. And I'd say right now, the number one thing is geopolitically, the conditions seem to be very similar to 2020 as well. I mean, right now, we've seen the market go sideways, both in the stock market, the crypto market, and pretty much everywhere. And it really, in my opinion, comes down to what's happening with the war right now. The fact that the feds did not cut interest rates. That's a huge deal for everyone. So we have so much uncertainty and so much bad news that people, they fear, and they have these knee-jerk reactions like we talk about, and it really just causes people to panic sell. It makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of fear and uncertainty right now, just as there was in 2020. If you remember, when the COVID crash happened, no one really knew what to happen next. Everyone feared that things would keep getting worse, but the opposite ended up being true. So if you fast forward to 2024, the sentiment is similar with the geopolitical tensions stirring around the globe. I say all of this that maybe the worst of this little correction we've experienced is behind us, and we'll continue to consolidate like we did in 2020 for a couple of months until the market is ready to rip again.
Yeah, and I think that's a very plausible thing that could possibly happen. And I wouldn't be surprised if Bitcoin got down to like 50, 52,000. We know we see strong support at that level. I don't think it's likely to happen, but it could happen. And the reason why we like to tell you about these things that are likely to happen is because it's a lot easier to control emotions if you've already played something in your head. So yep. We like to talk about all scenarios, even if it's not likely, maybe likely, highly likely, regardless of the spectrum of likelihood it is, we like to talk about what could happen because it helps people make those decisions. So there's two main reasons why we believe there could be a big, small, or whatever, some type of retraction is because of historical analysis with the miners, right? Is that there's a lot of happiness, excitement, euphoria when there's a Bitcoin halving. Because as retail investors or as institutional investors, we expect the price of Bitcoin to go up. We can get rich that way. Or we can make a significant amount of money. But on the other side, you have to remember is that they cut the miners' rewards in half. Yep. So there's a lot of miners out there that all of a sudden, you know, the halving was on Friday. So Thursday, we're making twice as much as they are today because the price of Bitcoin hasn't changed. In a few weeks, some of those miners are going to be put out of business. So what do you do when you put out of business, right? Is that you sell everything you have. You sell the equipment, you sell the rigs, you sell any Bitcoin that you may have in your coffers, and you end business, right? So what does that do? It creates a huge influx of Bitcoin on the market, which causes the price of Bitcoin to stay stagnant or even decline in the period after the halving. Eventually, all that is bought up, the supply that's on the seller side of the market is absorbed, and then Bitcoin is able to rebound from those that miner sell-off. Two is that we're in the middle of geopolitical uncertainty. With the war in Ukraine, with the war with Iran and Israel, those things do cause the price of Bitcoin to be affected.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the main takeaway for this point is, and then we can move further along, is for everyone to understand, in prior halvings, you speak of historical data, we generally see a downturn or a sideways action for Bitcoin after the halving, sometimes for 5, 6, even 7 months. And right now, I think the whole world of the new investors and the retail investors expected as soon as the halving happened that we're going to see this hockey stick action, and then all of a sudden Bitcoin is just going to go to the moon. That's just not historically the case. And that's why we just have to keep getting the word out to get people to understand and prepare them for the market activity and what we expect to happen. And that's what's so critical and why I love this podcast, because we can break it down for everyone to give everyone that comfort to know what we know and be able to understand where we believe things are going to go. And if you imagine, though, what happens when the miners do stop selling, the demand keeps increasing. And if the geopolitical conflicts overseas begin to cool, then all of a sudden we have the perfect storm where we could begin to see Bitcoin cycle up, maybe as high as the 100K or 200K market in this cycle. And that's where it really gets good for everyone. But I just want to make it clear, none of that should be expected to happen in the coming days or weeks because of history and what generally happens with the halving.
And I agree. I've always said is I think that Bitcoin can reach as high as $250,000 this cycle, with the demand driven by ETFs, institutional buying, and still that retail involvement is on the horizon. And we know that because we can do on-chain analysis. And we see that there's not a lot of new wallets being created. We see a lot of wallets that are already existing that are accumulating. Yep. So that big retail involvement hasn't even happened yet. And that's what drives the price exponentially. So like I said, is that I believe that Bitcoin retail adoption is still on the horizon and we still have massive retail involvement coming.
Yes, I'm glad you brought this up. This could be really on its own talking point because there's so much to unpack here. But I want to dive into it a little bit further. You know, historically, Bitcoin's network didn't even have much applicational value, at least not in the development sense that networks like Ethereum and Solana had. And that has all changed with Ordinals being launched last year. And when this happened, the Bitcoin network instantly had thousands of people using the network every day for the first time in history. Because before Ordinals, we all looked at Bitcoin as a store of value and kind of the granddaddy of crypto. But now there's actually use case and a lot more ways to make money through Bitcoin with the adoption of Ordinals and what's happening there. And so that's really important for everyone to understand that Bitcoin is not just a store of value anymore.
Now, let me stop you right there, because Ordinals, this is huge news, like I always say. Ordinals are a game changer. Yep. And I want to make sure people understand what they are before we move forward. Now, one of the biggest things about Ethereum, in 2015, Ethereum came out. It changed the entire game for cryptocurrency, right? Is that Ethereum allowed you to store data and store NFTs and other things on their blockchain. That was crazy at the time. We never saw anything like that. Bitcoin and other cryptos that existed beforehand were only used to exchange value. So Ethereum changed the game. Bitcoin was left behind. Ethereum became the second biggest crypto in the world simply because it was able to do that. So now that Bitcoin is going to have Ordinals, which Ordinals are the same thing as Ethereum, more or less, it allows people to write data, digital items, NFTs, and even real world assets on the Bitcoin blockchain, which is the biggest blockchain in the world. So this is going to cause a lot of new institutional excitement, a lot of new development being done on Bitcoin, a lot of new NFTs and other things like that. And people may even choose to use Bitcoin over Ethereum because it's the biggest blockchain in the world. It can create exponential value for Bitcoin. It could also cause the value and the price to match.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying, Armando. You know, with Ordinals being so new to everyone, it's easy to forget what's commonly known and not when you've been in a place as long as we have. So it's really good when we clear that up. So picking up from where I left off, thousands of daily users on the Bitcoin network wasn't just a phase and has continued to persist and grow. It's just over 1 year that more than $3 billion has already been moved through these ordinal assets, which is, like you said, is huge news. So you might think it's just big wallets carrying the load, but that couldn't be further from the truth. The $3 billion in transactions has involved over 600,000 unique wallets and over $2.5 million transactions, which really is huge news.
Now, like I said, is that this is just the beginning. And I know that when you just brought up ordinals and you said it was huge, and I agree with you, is that I don't think we truly understand how big this is. Remember, the halving just took place. There's something else that happened. It was the launch of the Runes Token Protocol. Now, this protocol allows people to create NFTs on Bitcoin's network. This is huge, and it's going to be a big driver of narrative in this next crypto cycle.
Yeah, this is great, Armando. And we've already seen its impact in its just first few days of action. So since the launch of Runes Protocol, fees have soared as users have rushed to mint new tokens on the Bitcoin network. While no one likes high fees, we have to look at it objectively. High fees point to an uptick in user activity, and this means that innovation on the Bitcoin network is skyrocketing, and we believe that this will be a major catalyst as part for Bitcoin price to rise. And when the miner selling pressure subsides and stability of the geopolitical tensions begin to form, this could all be just great news for this bull cycle.
And I want to touch on fees again, is that this is a constant complaint that people have in Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies. Oh, the fees are high. The fees are high. You have to understand how technology works. Technology always starts out expensive. Cell phones used to be $3 a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, every technology, internet used to be what, $5 a minute or something?
Something crazy.
Yeah. So technology always starts out expensive. And then you get more and more efficient as you go down the path of innovation. And then at the end, it's cheap. Right? Is that as the Bitcoin network grows and every other crypto network grows, more nodes on the network, competition, they have to compete for efficiency. That drives the prices down over time. So I'm not even worried about fees now. You just have to be careful when you transfer back and forth. But fees long term is a moot point. It doesn't even matter because they will get cheaper. So I want to summarize a little bit on some other stuff we've been talking about is that me and you both talk a lot about manipulation in the market. There is a high likelihood that there could be short-term manipulation. And I'm telling you why it's because of one is because they can look at the halving as a buy the rumor, sell the news event. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that is that if you want to cause manipulation in the market, you can just promote that concept mm-hmm. and then push the price down. Everybody says, oh, it was just a buy on the news, sell on the rumor. The second narrative, you could say that the halving didn't work or it's not as effective as it was in the past. And that can also cause people to sell prematurely. So short-term manipulation is almost a certainty in this market. And I believe that that's going to cause the price of Bitcoin to drop also.
Yeah, look at just in the last couple weeks, Peter Schiff went on, and of course, he pushes the gold narrative, and he said that Bitcoin doesn't have any store of value and doesn't have any purpose, and it could go down to $20,000. And then a few days later, Jamie Dimon went back on, which I was shocked to see him do this, and he went back and said that Bitcoin was a Ponzi scheme and could go to zero. And so that is manipulation. They're not doing this for the benefits of our listeners and the people that are out there investing. They're doing it for their own benefit of their own pockets, their own companies. So always understand you have to be able to see through all of this and be able to know the macro levels and where the markets are going overall. And that's why we're so happy to put out this podcast every week to give you guys the best information that we can each and every week so you don't make those knee-jerk reactions.
And I want to talk about one more thing before we move on is that there's a big incentive to manipulate the market this time. Now, me and Robert both have said that we're more than likely going to be in a Bitcoin super cycle over the next 18 months, even 2 years. Now, the institutional investors, the rich, the elite, and the banks, they also see the opportunity as well. So there's a big opportunity here, right? And you got to remember, three things have happened. We're at the halving.
Yep.
The ETFs is the first time in history that retail investors have access to Bitcoin products through their 401ks, mm-hmm. through their Roth IRAs, through other paths, through banks. You know, they've never had access to that before. And this is the biggest time ever in history when the majority of people will understand the halving. I was at an event in L.A., over the weekend, and I've been talking about this for 4 years. I get on the stage, I say, who's heard of the halving? Two people, maybe one person out of 100 would know. This time, 70% of the room knew.
Yeah.
And that's a sign of what's coming. That's a sign that this the understanding of the halving is no longer going to be an advantage anymore because people are going to understand it. It more than likely will be priced in by the 2028 halving. So this is the last chance that a lot of people have to make a lot of money in cryptocurrency.
And I want to expand on a point you just made that I think is incredibly important that no one ever talks about. We, as retail investors, have been able to buy Bitcoin for the last 14 years. Armando and I have been doing it for a very long time. And something that he touched on that is very important for you to all understand why this time is different and this bull market is different, because he mentioned that family offices and big hedge funds and all of these big investment funds couldn't buy Bitcoin for their clients in the past. They didn't have a legal path to do so. Now they do through the ETFs. This is a key point that everyone needs to understand because you have these multi-millionaire and billionaire families that have their money in these funds. They didn't have an outlet to be able to do it. Now they do, and that's why the adoption rate is so much different now than in the past, because there is a legal path for these billions and billions of dollars to be invested in Bitcoin, and that is why we believe this is a different halving and a different time for this bull market, and that this will, let's call it the next 18 months, be the biggest wealth transfer moment of our lifetimes, and that's why we harp to the mountaintops for all of you to keep listening and take notes and take action, because it's just so incredibly important. Okay, before moving into our next talking point, let's hear a quick message for our amazing sponsor, Proppy. Whether you're a real estate professional looking to modernize your practice or a buyer-seller eager to navigate the market with the latest technology, Proppy offers an unparalleled platform that simplifies, secures, and revolutionizes real estate transactions. So get ahead of the curve and explore how Proppy can transform your real estate experience today. For more information, go to proppy.com. And for those of you that are looking for a new side hustle that no one is talking about, go to propykeys.com and learn how to mint properties and landmarks on the blockchain and make money. Okay, Armando, let's get into our next talking point, which is the altcoin bounce. Talk our listeners through it and give us your insight of what you think is next and what the listeners should expect in the altcoin market.
Yeah, in last week's episode, we discussed the panic that both you and I saw over the last few weeks when altcoins dived. Mm-hmm. For those of you that weren't following, altcoins on average fell between 25 and 40% in that last Bitcoin pullback. It created a wave of panic that I haven't seen in a while. Me and Robert both were overwhelmed with DMs. What should I do? Should I sell? Is Bitcoin over? Is crypto over? It was panic that I haven't seen in years, right? But the key point I want to point out is that when panic levels are high, that's an opportunity. You shouldn't be panicking because if everything's dropping that much, the masses are panicking. So if you go opposite the masses, you're almost always right. You don't join in with them. That's what causes people to lose so much when they trade stocks and crypto. But that was an opportunity there, right? And if you were buying at that time, you'd be very happy right now.
Yeah, when we were in Miami, it was kind of crazy. We were watching, Armando was driving back, and we were watching the markets, and we actually pulled over, grabbed lunch, and both got on our phones and just started buying up more stuff because we understand these market cycles, and all of you need to learn that as well, is that so many people wait until it is at the top or the perceived top of the market, and that's when you start buying because you're scared of buying low and selling high. And that's why so many people get it wrong. And, you know, last week alone, if you look at it, we gave two fresh call outs in Celestia and Jupiter. And since calling them out, Celestia is already up 30% and Jupiter's up 33%. And why do I bring this up? Is because we're never going to be buying when the masses are buying. We're never going to be buying at the top, and neither should you. We're always going to provide you information before the rest of the market. That is our job. That is our goal. That is why we love the education process and giving back through our podcast and through our communities, because we want to get you in to the right projects and have you educated long before the masses are buying. We see it all the time. We'll do a call out, and we will just be crushing this call out 2, 3, 4, 4 weeks, sometimes months, and then all the other fake gurus out there jump on and say, no one's talking about this coin.
Well, it's already up.
Yeah, we crack up about this. We'll be up 200%, and they'll just start talking about it and think that they cured cancer or something. So it's just very important that these markets aren't designed to always go up and to the right. And that's why you have to understand the market cycles, be patient, and like I always say, when in doubt, zoom out.
And that's exactly what I talk about all the time, and you as well, is that you have to buy before the hype cycle starts. And these, like you said, these fake gurus get on and they start screaming at the camera when something's already up 80, 90, 100%. And then that's normally, there's going to be a pullback after that. There always is, almost always. And then people get scared and lose their money. And they wonder why they keep losing that investment. You have to get on the plane while it's on the ground. You can't try to get on the plane when it's in the air. The risk is a lot higher. The risk is low when it's stable on the ground. It hasn't taken off yet. And that's how you have to look at investments. You can't always try to go with emotion. If everybody's exciting, euphoria, it's not. Most of investing is lull periods,
yep,
where nothing's happening, right? But think about this, is that most people do trade on hype. So how can you manipulate the masses? Well, you do it through the media. That's why hype cycles exist.
Yep.
It's because the rich, the elite, and the banks who control these investments, they have access to the media. They can make a call and say, hey, run this story. Because they know when people hear this story, they're going to panic and sell.
Yep.
And then they buy it cheaper, and then they just repeat that cycle. And that's one of the biggest reasons why the rich get richer. This is one thing that people don't talk about. The rich get richer because they buy before hype cycles, let it go up, and they sell into the hype cycle. That's another thing people don't realize. Rich, the elite, and the banks don't try to time the market and wait to the peak. They sell into the exit liquidity. And what the exit liquidity is they, whenever they buy these assets, they have to sell it to somebody.
Yep.
So they call the media again and say, hey, run this story about Bitcoin going a million, whatever it is. Everybody gets hyped up and starts buying, and they sell their positions into that run up. And then they wait for it to crash again and buy it again. That's one reason why the gap between the rich and rich and poor keeps getting wider and wider, because the poor funnel money up to the rich in that cycle over and over and over again.
Yeah, the rich, the elite, and the banks are the greatest shillers of mankind, because they can literally move a market, because so many retail investors do these knee-jerk reactions and they panic sell or they hype buy. And it's just crazy to me that no matter how much we beat this to the masses, that so many still don't listen. And it's crazy. If you guys could be a fly on a wall when he and I are together in an event, when the market's going up and crazy, our phones go crazy because everyone's so hyped. And then as soon as a market corrects, then our phones go crazy again, melting off of the desk because everyone's like, what do we do? What do we do? The market's down. The market's down. Stop worrying about it. It doesn't matter. If you believe Ethereum is going to be $20,000 in 2 to 3 years, then who cares about a correction? If you believe a Bitcoin is going to be $250,000 in 2 to 3 years, then who cares? You have to learn that none of this matters and to understand what all this manipulation does to the markets. Armando, did we miss anything on the altcoin front, or do you have any call outs from last week that you want to touch on?
So yeah, actually we did. There was two call outs over the last few episodes that did extremely well. One was LCX and one was Rio. LCX is up 22%, Rio is up 24%, and Ondo is up 16%. That's all in a stagnant market, and that all happened within the last 7 days.
Yeah, and you got all of those call-outs right here, and don't forget Proppy. We called out Proppy 6 weeks ago at 48 cents, and it almost hit $4 last week, and I think as of this episode, it's like $3.50. So that was another incredible call-out. So it's really like clockwork with our call-outs on this podcast since the launch. So remember, guys, to always take notes and take action. Okay, since the first talking point was essentially two talking points, we're going to dive straight into the question and answer by you guys, our amazing audience, to cap off this episode.
Before we get into these questions, I want to give people a chance to win $100. The last person that did this just got sent their $100 gift or reward for commenting Proppy in the comments. Now, I need you guys to do something for us. Comment the word Proppy in the comments. We're going to choose a random winner, and we're going to send $100 in Proppy to you next episode. We're going to announce the winner in the next episode. So let's get into these questions.
Okay, so Landon Kennard reached out, and he said, what do you guys think of Floki, and what will it hit by the end of this year?
Now, I don't want to speculate on price here, but Floki has a great community. Flugy has a lot of value based on what they do in the community, the education initiatives, and a lot more things that Flugy does. I like Flugy a lot. I think it has great potential going forward. I don't know exactly where to be at the end of the year, but I think Flugy has a lot of great things on the horizon.
Luke Molly asks, hey guys, thanks for the podcast. Really informative and educational, and I love watching it. My question is about Solana. Do you see it as a good long-term hold? Luke, great question, and the answer is yes and no for me, and I'd love to hear Armando's take. I think Solana is a great project. I think it is a long-term hold, but I believe that with the advent of the Base Network, a lot of my investing into newer coins is migrating over to the Base Network versus the Solana Network. So I'm still holding Solana, but I do that with a little bit of a hedge because I believe that there are better places to put my money right now, but I do have a good bag of Solana. Armando, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. Most of what you said, I think Solana is a good hold going forward. I'm not going to add any more money to Solana because, like I said, at this point, I think there are some better projects out there. But I'm not going to take away from my Solana bag either because I still believe in Solana going forward in the long term.
Okay, our last question of this episode is from Adam Ligman. One thing I haven't heard you mention about are the Bitcoin miner stocks. Do you have any favorites as we move into the halving? Best luck, Adam. Yes, Adam, great question. We called out CleanSpark quite a long time ago. It has returned over 300%, I believe, in the last 8 months since we called it out. That is one of my favorites and Armando's favorites. We both have large bags of it. But I think also Armando has a couple others to add that we've been buying for a very long time that we believe will do well through the halving and this bull market.
Yeah, in the last halving, Riot and Mara did extraordinarily well. And I don't see how that's going to change going into this halving. I also have, those are the three I have in almost, I have more of that, to be honest, than CleanSpark. I probably got half of, if you look at just what I have in Bitcoin miners, half of that, it's in CleanSpark, and maybe 25 is in Mara and Riot. And like I said, they're all a good place. You just have to do what's good. Each one has a different level of risk and reward, and you just have to do your own research. But I think that's a great play because you not only use the leverage of Bitcoin, it's almost a way of using leverage against Bitcoin, right? Because the miners go up at a higher rate traditionally and historically than Bitcoin goes up because they make their profits by mining Bitcoin. So as the price of Bitcoin goes up, they make more profit.
I want to thank each and every one of you for listening and following along. You can find us on Instagram at Crypto Trends Podcast and on Spotify, Apple, and YouTube. We're so excited for the remainder of 2024 and sharing all of our crypto insights with all of you. If you love the podcast, please share with a friend and give it a 5-star review, and we'll see you all next week.